Hello, hello, hello. Yes, we are working, and I'm going to leave that in, because why not? You're listening to the Sarah Fader podcast. This is Sarah Fader. This is what anxiety feels like. I'm here with my girl, Caitlin, the intern, Caitlin Wilson, founder of Helping You Stay, and recovered self-harm and recovered eating disorder individual, very strong woman. And Caitlin, welcome. You are at a Harvard summer program speaking to us from a dorm room. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so tell us about, let's go back. Let's go back in time to 12-year-old Caitlin Wilson. What is going through her head? What's happening with her?
Wow, okay. 12 years old, that was 6 years ago. I'm now 18. At the time, I was not diagnosed with depression or anxiety or anything. I grew up with 7 siblings in the household, and it's always been a really rough thing because I never really fit in. And I grew up shy, and I feel like that was a part of me, but I kind of overlooked it, and so did my parents. So being 12, I had a lot of emotions, but I never really talked about it with anybody because I was ashamed. And there was a lot of stigma within my family about mental illness, which was why I never really vocalized it at that point. And that's when I started to self-harm, and that followed through high school.
So what was your first experience with self-harm? When you say self-harm, what does that look like?
That meant for me that I was physically harming myself with objects,
mm-hmm.
like a razor,
mm-hmm.
or blades from a sharpener. And I immunized myself mostly on my legs and arms because I can hide it with sleeves and pants. And I didn't think anyone would suspect anything like that. Because I seemed happy, but honestly, I wasn't.
So what were you unhappy about?
My body. I felt really insecure about my body, my physical appearance. I always compared myself to my sisters, and I thought that they were really thin and beautiful, and I was just this fat person.
Mm-hmm.
And I still struggle with that now, but it's less because I've been able to manage it and receive help in therapy, and I've been through a lot of hospitalizations for depression and suicide attempts and that kind of thing. But at the time, it was like, it was a nightmare for me because I could never function correctly.
Right.
And I couldn't talk to anyone about it.
So you're 12, you feel like you can't function, you're having all of these depression symptoms that you don't feel like you can talk about with anyone.
Right.
You feel alone. So when does that lead to, or how does that lead to you then wanting to end your life?
I guess it just spiraled out of control. My feelings just got worse and worse, and at the time, I was getting bullied, which I also didn't tell anyone about, which also led me into developing an eating disorder and self-harming. So that also played a role into my mental illness and also led me to wanting to take my own life. And at the time, I did attempt suicide, but again, I never told anyone about it.
How did you attempt to end your life?
There were times when I tried to hang myself, and a couple times I tried to even overdose, but I could never find anything to overdose on.
And so, when you say you were hospitalized, what was the first hospitalization?
That was in 2015, January 2015. I was hospitalized for trying to take my own life. And that was the first time I opened up to anyone about trying to take my own life. I told my mom about it. I don't know why I did. I just thought that it was time for me to tell her.
How old were you at the
and
time?
And I think...
How old were you?
I was 14 at the time.
Okay.
I was 14.
So now, before you were hospitalized, did somebody find you trying to die by suicide?
No.
Okay, so what happened? How did this happen? How do you get to the hospital?
I just told my mom about it, the next day, and she took me, and then they asked me so many questions, and that night I remember being officially an inpatient, and I stayed in the hospital for about 2 weeks.
Mm. So now,
I was discharged.
Right. Now, so... this was when you tried to hang yourself or another method?
I tried slitting my wrist. It was another method, yeah.
Okay. So how did your mom respond when you told her that you tried to end your life?
She honestly was a little frantic, but I think she handled it the way she could because that was the first time she ever heard me vocalize my mental health issues, and she can see it in my eyes, I was crying, and she can see that I was struggling, and she immediately took me to the hospital, and the doctors were asking me questions, and I was in the waiting room, and she was in the other waiting room, and she was crying and talking to my dad and my siblings on the phone, and really, she tried her best advocating for me to get help at that point, which I'm grateful for. That's when I started, after I got discharged from that hospitalization, that's when I started therapy.
Okay. Now we're going to go back in time again. So we're going back to 12-year-old Caitlin, now that we know a little bit more of your story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you are suffering. You don't have anybody to talk to. And then tell us what leads to founding Helping You Stay. How does it happen? How do you make it on Twitter? Tell us about the Project LG and how does this come to fruition?
Okay. Well, actually, I didn't have any intentions in the first place of creating Helping You Stay. My first intention was to have an outlet for myself. But then I started realizing that there were more people struggling with similar issues like I was, and I didn't want it to be just about me.
Right.
I wanted to form a movement to help people.
That's great. So you wanted to help people. And then... we talked about this because I found you through Project LG, which stands for what?
Project Lifeguard. And that was founded by Twitter handle Against Suicide. Her name, the founder name is Carrie Shade.
Mm-hmm.
She's from West Virginia. And I was inspired to also help people through her tag, which I guess... helped expand my account because people also saw that I created this movement similar to hers. So I help people through hashtag Project LG. And
so, yeah, you wanted to do something sort of in the vein of Project LG.
Yes, I did.
So tell me about what happened.
So that's when I tried to expand Helping You Stay by reaching out to a wide audience of really anyone that, even if they're not struggling with mental health issues, just to have an outlet for them to vent or to share their experience with relatives or friends that may have experienced mental health issues. And I kind of wanted to build a community for everyone. So that's why I created Helping You Stay.
And you've created this huge community. So do you get people reaching out to you for help?
Yes, I do. I also try to have them have an open mind to know that I'm not a mental health professional. I'm just a teenager that has free time and I want to help people and I enjoy doing so. And I give them resources if they do need mental health professional, like suicide hotlines, websites to connect them with professional therapists, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's very smart because you're not a mental health professional. Even me, I'm not licensed, right? So I can't give advice regarding mental health. I can talk to people on a peer-to-peer basis, same as you, right? But I don't have an LPC, I don't have an MSW or a PhD or anything that licenses me in the state of Oregon, right? So I think it's good to just disclose that. So very good choice, very safe choice. So I remember coming across your profile because I saw this hashtag for Project LG and I thought it was so interesting and I became fascinated with all these mental health things. And I think at the time I was separating from my husband and I was like really invested in finding people that, what's the word? People that were in that kind of wheelhouse, right? Why, computer? Why? Don't you love that? It's like when technology fails. I'm leaving that in because I think it's funny. So I remember being like, I want to find everyone. Look, my main goal was to find the person who created Project LG. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I kept being like trying to find out what it stood for. And eventually I just Googled it because the detective in me was like, maybe I can figure it out on Twitter and someone says what it is or whatever. But in the process of being this, you know, Sarah Fader detective, Sarah Fader PI, right? I find helping you stay, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And then it says founder Caitlin Wilson, then I go to you and I'm like, oh, she's interesting and she's from New York. I'm like, oh, we're already homies, right? So, but then I was also hesitant to like talk to you too much because it's like, oh, what does this mom have in common with me? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to be like, okay, old lady, you know? But I did think that what you were doing was really awesome. And I remember asking you, at the time we had Stigma Fighters Teen, and we were trying to get teenagers to write for the site. And I remember having Courtney reach out to you and ask, like, would you write for Stigma Fighters? And I was like, you got to get this girl to write for us. I know I'm so weird and old, and maybe she'll listen to you. And I, you know, I'm being silly. I'm not really old, but you know, like I sound like I'm talking, like I'm walking with a walker. But the thing is that I thought I saw how much you had created with this community. And I didn't realize that you were 12 when you created it. Like, I thought you were a teenager. I mean, I knew you were a teenager, but like, I had no idea that that's when it started. So in my mind, we talked about this yesterday, right? In my mind, I'm like, this girl must think I'm such a weirdo. And then in your mind, you're like, well, go tell us what you thought.
Honestly, I didn't think you were weirdo at all. I thought you were pretty cool. Like, so cool.
Go. So you
were,
go ahead, sorry. You were saying I was cool, which I like. That's exciting.
Yes, you are very cool. I was just really scared to reach out to you. I think that was because of my anxiety, and I thought that I would annoy you and that kind of thing.
But see, remember what we talked about yesterday? That's so funny. Like, me, you, and Spark were on the phone, and you were like, I'm afraid of annoying. And I was like, yes, welcome to the club. And I feel like at least, like, once a week, I'm like, I'm so annoying. Like, lately what's been happening to me, and you probably relate to this, because, like, you know, that, you know the way I am. I'm like, hi, be my friend, right? And then if people don't respond to that, and I like to talk on the phone, right? So remember, you were like, do you have any jobs? I'm like, oh, yeah, call me. And then you did. But then some people are like, that's weird. But I'm like, okay, but you know what? How are you supposed to get to know someone via text forever? Like, that's not actually realistic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
So people are weirded out by that. They're like, I'd rather email. I'm like, I'm not a robot. Like, we're humans, you know? And I can understand if I was, like, sending people dick pics. Like, that would make sense. But that doesn't even, you know, like, that, I don't have a penis. But you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if I'm like, yes, here's my phone number to talk about job opportunities or connecting or networking as a writer. I think they must assume that I'm needy and annoying and, like, want to be their best friend. Like, that's what I think it is. Because I'll connect with different writers and they're like, yeah, great. We're going to meet for coffee. And then it doesn't happen. And I'm like, okay, so I'm just a loser. Like, but you know what it is? In New York, there's this thing where, like, nobody has time to hang out ever. Like, the only people that I would that I hung out with when I visited, right, were my best friends and my parents, right? And then my friend Tristan, who I just became friendly with, and he's really cool, but he makes time to hang out because he's not from New York. But the thing is, like, you know that sort of culture in New York where everyone's busy, I'm doing these things, I'm so busy, and you're like, oh, wow, you're so important and busy. But that's why people never meet new people, because they're busy. They're so busy. I'm so, what are you busy doing? I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know? So then when I went to LA and saw my SoCal friends, they're like, yeah, man, let's go. Everyone's like, let's hang out. Even if they just want to get coffee or just like come out for like an hour, everyone's down. New York's not like that. They're like, yeah, no, I'm not hanging out with you. I'm too busy. I'm too busy breathing. And then, and you're like, it doesn't take that much effort. I don't understand. And that, but in Portland also, it's a weird thing where it's like, either you're always like, yeah, come over to my house and hang out. Or people will be like, sure, I'm coming over in 5 minutes, and they never show up. I shit you not. That's lame. Like, at least in New York, they'll be like, I don't have time. They'll just say it. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what you got to admire about New Yorkers. In Portland, yeah, it's like they call it the Seattle no, where, like, if you were like, hey, let's go get coffee, I'd be like, yeah, yeah, cool, see you tomorrow, and then just don't show up. Can you imagine? If you did that shit in New York, what would the person do? If, like, let's say that you said to your friend, right, let's meet for coffee at 3 o'clock at, like, I don't know, Barnes & Noble or something on 82nd Street of Broadway, and they just didn't show up, what would happen? What would you do?
I would kind of be a little angry.
Yeah, you'd be mad! Like a human being, you'd be mad if somebody. But that's the thing, is it's right, because that's what human beings do. If you'd be like, yeah, I don't understand why you didn't call or tell me you weren't coming, or then you start to think, are they dead? I don't know, right? But here, you can just not fucking show up. I don't understand how is that accepted? To me, that's so rude. You know, like, that doesn't make any sense. Unless you're dead, unless something happened to you, which God forbid something happened to the point where you couldn't go to the bookstore because you died, then I would forgive you, but then you'd be dead anyway. So anyway, the point is, don't not show up because you died. That's the point. That's the moral of the story. I think that should be the name of this podcast. If you died and don't show up, I forgive you. That, I think I'm going to tweet that to you. If you die and don't show up, I forgive you. That should be the name of a best-selling book. Okay, let's play a game. The game is creepy children's books. So let's think of what is a common children's book that is actually creepy. Let's both think about this. I'll come up with one. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, even like Corduroy, right? Do you remember the book Corduroy?
Yes.
Okay. So here's one. Did you ever read The Mixed Up Files of Basil E. Frankweiler?
Yes.
Okay. Let's think about this book for a second. Let's think about this. Two children, brother and sister, run away from home, get on Metro North, mm-hmm, with spare change, and go to the Museum of Metropolitan Museum of Art, right? It's the Met, isn't it? Yeah. And mm-hmm, live in the museum with spare change that they got from their parents. First of all, highly unrealistic in the inflation process that's happening in New York. You're not even going to be able to afford like a ham sandwich. I don't remember how they ate. Did they just bring food? Do you remember that?
I think they did.
I think they did bring food. We have to.
Yeah.
I think we have to research this. Then when they ran out of money, they started going into the fountain and taking the wishing coins.
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with the person that wrote this book? Like, that is so creepy and such bad lessons. Like, it's okay to run away from home as long as you have enough money. And there's a source of income where you are, even if it's not lucrative. You know what I mean? You're just basically grooming people to be homeless. Like, what is this even about? You are grooming children to learn how to be homeless in New York. Wrong. So now, your turn. What's a creepy children's book?
Wow.
There's so many of them. Like, what books did you used to read? Think about the books that you used to read as a kid, or that your mom read to you, or that you read at school, and you were just like, that doesn't sound right.
Shoot.
Yes. I'm not frozen. I'm frozen like Elsa. Am I frozen? I'm leaving that in, too. So, Okay, we were talking. You thought of one. You thought of a creepy children's book.
Mm-hmm.
Which is?
Where the Wild Things Are. I found the illustrations kind of creepy. I don't know why.
No, but you know what? That book is fucking creepy. You're right. You know why? You want me to tell you why? You go first, and I'll tell you why that book is creepy.
Honestly, I didn't even really... I was so creeped out by the illustrations, I never really focused on the story itself.
Yeah, because first of all, they're fucking creepy. And secondly, let's think about this book. Now, I have read this book multiple times to myself and my children, who are probably traumatized. Because this is how this book is. There's a child. There's a small child, probably 5, 6, something like that. I would say kindergarten age. Who is dressed up in a weird monster costume, running around the house, being loud, being an asshole, right? The parents are like, go the fuck to sleep, you're annoying, stop it. So then he doesn't listen, because children don't listen, so they send him to room without dinner. They send him to his room without eating. Okay, so first of all, we're talking about abuse, right? So that's for number one. It's like, oh, you're not going to listen? Go to sleep without eating. Mm-hmm. So he then goes to sleep. He goes into his room, and I don't know, magically, I can't remember how this happens, he's transported to this magical world with all these monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So already there's the premise for, like, a crazy situation. So this guy, this five-year-old, is hanging out with a bunch of monsters that are terrifying. But he's not scared. Who the fuck knows why? That's not realistic at all. So they're dancing around being fucking terrifying looking, and he's just chilling out? That doesn't make any fucking sense. He's five. So then, unless you're kind of thinking about, like, kids maybe don't judge people like we judge people, I don't know. Anyway, eventually he makes the decision that he's homesick and he doesn't want to hang out with the fucking monsters anymore, so he gets on the boat and goes back home, and then magically there's dinner waiting downstairs for him. So what the fuck is the moral of this story? The moral of the story is you can be a misbehaved, horrible child, go hang out with terrible influences, come back, and then be rewarded with dinner? I don't think that's a good story. I mean, do you?
No.
No. What message is that? Like, if you read this book, like, what message is that teaching children?
I'm not sure if there is a message.
Yeah, exactly. There is. I'm not sure there's a message either. I think it's actually detrimental to our society. Whoever wrote Where the Wild Things, I think they're probably dead. But, like, whoever wrote this, if you're listening, in your grave, you have horribly scarred many children. And you should be ashamed of yourself. Also, okay, have you ever read Frog and Toad?
Yes.
Okay, do you remember, now talking about eating disorders, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have BDD. I have body dysmorphic disorder. Do you have symptoms of that? Like you don't view yourself correctly. Like you don't see yourself as you actually look.
Right.
Do you think you have those symptoms?
I'm not sure I do.
Okay. Well, let me tell you. There's a story in Frog and Toad that is so horrible, and it is called The Swim, okay? So what happens is it starts out really nice. Like, they go out, and then Toad is in his bathing suit, which he's kind of ashamed of, but he goes for a swim in the lake, whatever. But he's like, listen, Frog, I don't want to get out of the water, right? Because I do not want these animals to see me in my bathing suit. I feel weird. So obviously he has body image issues. He doesn't want them to see him. Made his point clear. The boundaries were clear. What does Frog do? He doesn't let them know that they need to turn around, right? I'm sorry, let me back up. I've written a blog post about this. But they're like, come out of the water, Toad. And it's all like peer pressure. They're like, come out of the water. We don't care. We want to see what you look like in your bathing suit. Do you know how horrifying that is? If somebody doesn't like the fact that they look weird in their bathing suit, come out of the... Do you think that that's going to make me feel better?
No.
No!
No.
Again, what message is that sending? What do you think?
It's an awful message. Just the fact that they can't respect his decision on that.
Yeah, right? It's in personal choices, not respecting his boundaries. So eventually he's like, well, fuck it. I'm going to get out of the water because they're not listening to me. So he gets out of the water. And what did these animals do? What do you think when he gets out of the water?
They probably laughed at him.
They laughed at him. Exactly. Yeah. They laughed at him. So the last part of this story is the turtle laughed, the snake laughed, the lizard laughed. And guess who the last person who laughed at Toad was?
Frog?
Exactly. And Frog laughed. And then Toad goes, I'm going home. And that's the end of the story, Caitlin. That's it. That's how the story ends.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
That's terrible.
Yes! Why is it terrible?
I can't even begin to, like, I try thinking about it if I were to be in his shoes and for kids to see it that way. I'm hoping, though, that the message would be the opposite, to teach kids the opposite instead of laughing in a situation like that, to respect one's boundaries. But I'm not really sure.
That, you know what, that's a good point. I've never thought about it like that. Maybe then it's the onus of the parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that story is like the school of hard knocks. So, mm-hmm. like, after it's over, the parent has to go, what do you think of that, this? Do you think this is what you're supposed to do to your friends? Like, maybe it's a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is anybody in your family a teacher?
No.
Okay. Well, we are now teaching children by them listening to this really inappropriate podcast about children's books. So the point is that there is no point. That's the ADHD mantra. The point is there is no point. Caitlin, it has been a pleasure. Where can people find out more about you on Twitter and helping you stay?
They can just go to my handle at helping you stay, and it's all there.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And
thank you.
I'm not going to hang up because I'm going to talk to you in a minute, but say bye to everybody.
Bye. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
You're welcome.